We're holding on Lamed Tes Amud Beis. Three lines from the bottom. We learned yesterday about statements by Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Yehuda in connection with Tam and Mu'ah. We said that you have a case of an ox belonging to a cheresh shirt of a cotton, that gourd, so Rabbi Yaakov had said that you have to pay chatzi nezek. And we were discussing why should that be. So Rabbi had explained, we're talking about that the animals are moored. Now, a moored, normally you would pay nezek shalim. Here, what it is that he guarded the apotropos, who's supposed to be responsible for the animal, in lieu of the cheresh shirt of a cotton. He was guarding it, but not really, not with shmira ma'ula, not with the best kind of guarding, in which case it would be an onus, but rather with shmira p'chusa, with the minimum kind of guarding. Like we said yesterday, for example, Rashi brings that, for example, he put up a regular door, and that would withstand a normal wind, but it wouldn't withstand a ruach she'ena metzuya, a stronger wind than normal. So now, a stronger wind than normal came and knocked down the door, and the animal went out and caused damage. So now, what we're saying is that Rabbi Yaakov agrees with Rabbi Yehuda on a couple of dinim, one of them being that that for a muad it is enough to do that kind of shmira. However, also, on the other hand, that a muad is a tam plus, in the sense that sad tamus mimkoimai medus, in the sense that the dinim that applied to it as a tam continue to apply to it as a muad, plus the additional dinim of a muad, which means, therefore, as a tam, you would have to do shmira ma'ula in order to be completely potter, and here it was shmira p'chusa. Therefore, Rabbi Yaakov would end up saying that that the apotropos is paying chatzi nezek for it. Well, whether the apotropos is paying or whether we take it out of the yisomim, that would be we discussed yesterday the machlokas of Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina on that subject. But anyway, the point is, according to Rava, Rabbi Yaakov does agree with Rabbi Yehuda. As far as those two points, as far as the point that you need only shmira p'chusa for a tam, for a muad, but on the other hand, the fact that a muad also has an element of tamus still to it, and therefore from that point of view, to be potter from that, you would need shmira muad. Then Abaya had disagreed and said that no, that Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Yehuda are actually arguing, and Rabbi Yehuda is saying that you pay nezek shalom, and Rabbi Yaakov is saying chatzi nezek. So now the Gemara says, so three lines from the bottom, Omelet of Achaba Abaya Ravina. Vishlemala Abaya. I understand according to Abaya, the Amma Pligi, that he says that Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Yehuda are arguing Shapir, then we understand why we have to say that the first, so we actually have two Brises in this connection. We had one Brisa that said that, we had one Brisa that was saying, was talking about, is talking about a muad, and we have another braisa then that was saying that so we had the first braisa is the one that says Rabbi Yaakov Meshalom Chatzi Nezek, which we said really meant Rabbi Yaakov says that you're paying Chatzi Nezek, and then you have a second braisa where it says clearly that where it says more clearly Rabbi Yehuda Mechayev Rabbi Yaakov Amar Chatzi Nezek. So then we have two different braises, so we would say that, so according to Abaya, it's easy enough to understand Shapir, then we understand the first braise is talking about Mord. And then the second one, so the first braise that was talking about Mord, and therefore, in other words, what Abaya is getting out from that is saying that that Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yaakov are arguing on the point, do we actually appoint an apotropos to, when you have an ox belonging to a cheresh shirt of a cotton, we appoint an apotropos to watch the animal, sure, but does that apotropos actually supervise the collected, do we actually collect from the goof of the animal under his supervision? That would be the machlokas of Yaakov and Rabbi Yehuda, that Rabbi Yehuda would say that yes, and therefore you're collecting the chatzi nezek of a tam from it. Well, therefore, if the animal is moored, then you're collecting nezek shalom, and Rabbi Yaakov would say that no, you're only paying the half of moored, because the half of tam is not to be collected under the apotropos's watch. So
So what you said, the first braisa means what? And the second braisa you didn't mention?
Yes, so sorry. We had two braises over here. One where it said, Rabbi Yaakov says that you pay chatzi nezek. And the second brisa says that Rabbi Yaakov, the second brisa says Rabbi Yehuda said Rabbi Yehuda Machayev, that Rabbi Yehuda is saying Yechayev Rabbi Yaakov Amachatzi Nezer. Now, according to Rava, the two brisa, according to Rava, the second brisa, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yaakov are not arguing. Rabbi Yehuda is being Machayev, but he didn't say how much. Rabbi Yaakov is explaining Chatzi Nezer. According to Rava, the second brisa is talking, or that both brises really are talking about a mord. According to Abaya, we don't need to say that. According to Abaya, at least the first brisa is, according to Abaya, we can say that they are in fact talking about mord. At least the first brisa is talking about a mord. The first brisa, when we only have Rabbi Yaakov's opinion and says that we collect only chatzi nezek, so Abaya is not going to understand that that's referring to a tam, because that would require us to say that ma'amidin apotropos, that we appoint an apotropos to collect for a tam chatzi nezek. And from the second brisa, where it says, where Rabbi Yaakov says that you in the second brisa, it's clear that it's not so, because in the second brisa you have when it says Rabbi Yehuda Machayev and Rabbi Yaakov Omer Chatzi Nezek Huda Meshalem, then according to Abaya, that implies the second brisa, both brisas, in other words, necessarily have to be talking about a mord, because otherwise there's no reason for Rabbi Yaakov to have to say Chatzi Nezek, because obviously a time you pay Chatzi Nezek. Therefore, Abaya is going to understand both brisas are talking about a mord, and the reason why in the first one Rabbi Yaakov says Chatzi Nezek, and in the second one he also says Chatzi Nezek, and in the first one we didn't have Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, so we're saying appoint Abaye, he and Rabbi Yehuda are arguing. The argument would be, do we appoint an apotropos to collect that Nezek? Do we appoint an apotropos to collect that Nezek? According to Rabbi Yehuda, yes. According to Rabbi Yaakov, no. We're not collecting the Chatzi Nezek of Tam, only the extra Chatzi Nezek that comes as a result of it being a mu'ad. So according to Abaye, if we understand it that way, then we understand why we couldn't say that the first brisa was talking about a tam. Then it would require us to say that Rabbi Yaakov says that you have an apotropos to collect for a tam to collect the chatzi nezek for a tam, and it's clear from the second brisa that not, because then in the case of a mord, then the second brisa is unquestionably talking about a mord, since Rabbi Yehuda says nezek sholim. Then it would require us to say that Rabbi Yaakov is saying that you do appoint an apotropos for that, and the second brisa makes it clear Rabbi Yaakov can't possibly be saying you appoint an apotropos for a mord, because then why are you paying only chatzi nezek? According to Abaye's understanding that he and Rabbi Yehuda are arguing. So we understand why the first brisa has to be talking about a mord, and the second one also, why both brisas have to be talking about a mord, according to Abaye. But Rabbi Acha bar Abaye says Ela l'Rava. But according to Rava, you have to ask.
According to Abaye, one second. Yeah. According to Abaye, both brises talk about a muad. One talks without a.
So what we're saying is, in the first brise, Rabbi Yaakov just says you pay chatzi nezek. Now what? And the second brise, now that could be understood to mean like Rava, that Rabbi Yaakov is basing that on Rabbi Yehuda's opinion and saying that there's a reason why we reduce it to chatzi nezek in this case, because he did shmira p'chose, he did a weak kind of shmira, and therefore he's potter on the side of muad, and he's only chayev for the side of tam. Comes the second brisa, says Abaya, that says that Rabbi Yaakov is arguing with Rabbi Yehuda, where therefore, according to Abaya's understanding, he's arguing with Rabbi Yehuda, therefore he obviously can't hold like him as far as that detail. Therefore, we have to understand it differently. In the second brisa that Rabbi Yaakov is paying, that is saying that you pay only chatzi nezek, meaning not the chatzi nezek of it being a tam, but rather the extra chatzi nezek by virtue of it being a muad. Meaning, in other words, so therefore he's saying that the fact that the animal is a tam, okay, but you don't have an apotropos to supervise the collection of chatzi nezek for a tam. So all we have is the extra chatzi nezek that comes by virtue of the animal being a mord. So that would explain Rabbi Yaakov's opinion. So both brises are talking about a mord, and in both of them, Rabbi Yaakov means that you're not collecting the half that comes by, because of it being a tam, you're only collecting the new half that came about by it being a mord. So according to Abaya, we understand, so if we follow Abaya's understanding, we understand why both brises have to be talking about a mord. Ela l'Rava, but Rav Acha bar Abaya continues, according to Rava, the Omer loy plig, where he says that Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Yehuda are not arguing, and both of them are, and both they're both saying the same thing, that the half that Rabbi Yaakov is talking about that you collect is the half of Tammuz, not the half of Mu'adus. Well, then you have to ask, Ademuki lo b'mu'ad, why are we saying that the first Braisa is talking about a mu'ad in the first place? Noitma b'tam, wouldn't it be more straightforward to say that that the first Braisa is referring to a tam? And say, and now in Rava's explanation, you had to say that that we were talking about that he did shmirah chusa. That it was in Rava's explanation, rather, we said it was a muad and he had only done shmirah chusa. Where we have later on in the parak, Rabbi Huda holds that shmirah chusa is enough for a muad. Again, like putting up a regular door rather than a stormproof door. So we could understand more straightforwardly on the face of it that the first Braisa is talking about a tam, and that would explain why Rabbi Yaakov is saying you pay chatzin nezek, because after all, what's chatzin nezek doing by mu'ad? And instead say, either of Yehuda do'ovid le'shmira p'chusa, v'loi ovid le'shmira mo'la, and say, then, depending on what you want to say, as far as what Rabbi Yaakov holds, whether he holds, now Rava had said that necessarily Rabbi Yaakov holds like Rabbi Yehuda, as far as the idea that by a mu'ad, shmira p'chusa is enough. But why do we need to say that? Instead, we could say, Rabbi Yaakov, we're not sure, he might hold like either of the two Tanoim that deal with this later in the Perek, either of Yehuda, da'ovid le'shmira p'chusav, la'ovid le'shmira ma'ula. If we follow Rabbi Yehuda, if he follows Rabbi Yehuda, then the case would be that the animal was a tam, and he did shmira p'chusa, but not shmira ma'ula, and then Rabbi Yehuda holds that by a tam, that's not enough, therefore that's why he's chayev b'chatzi nezek, either Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, da'ovid le'shmira klal, and if he follows Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, then we would say that he didn't guard it at all, and that's why he's chayev b'chatzi nezek. The Tanya, as we learn later on, in a Braisa, later on in our parak, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, echad tam ve'echad mu'ad, v'shamon shmira p'chusa p'turin, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, now you're going to have other opinions, we're going to get to them later on in the parak, but Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov holds that with either a tam or mu'ad, shmira p'chusa is enough to pater him from paying. As long as he did shmira p'chusa, then Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, if the animal got out and caused damage, then he's going to be potter because he did guard the animal. So then in that case, so we could understand the braisa that way. We could understand it referring to a tam. Now Tosfos points out earlier on Lamed Tes Amud Beis, we did say that if it's talking about a tam, then wouldn't it be poshut? Of course, a tam you do chatzin nezek, and then what is Rabbi Yaakov informing us? So now the Gemara is saying, the Tosfos explains, because before we didn't have the concept of tzad tamos dem koma emedis. We didn't bring in the point that the concept that when the animal is a mu'ad, that it still retains a certain status of tam. So now, before the Gemara had asked, why didn't it say Rabbi Yaakov Machayev, and we would understand, Machayev means he's Machayev, whatever a tam pays, which is chatzin nezek. Now that we're saying we have this consideration of tzad tamos bim koi ma'imedes, then therefore we have to clearly say chatzin nezek, which tells us therefore that we are talking about a tam, and that we're saying the apotropos supervises the collection of the chatzin nezek. If we said mechayev, then we would assume that it's talking about a mu'ad. So why don't we understand it that way? It would be more straightforward to understand it that way. And the point is, what the result of that would be, v'hok mashmalon, sort of Achaba Abaya is asking, v'hok mashmalon, in which case the chiddush of that braisa would be, v'hok mashmalon, Rabbi Yaakov, rather, d'mam midn l'hant l'hapatrubas l'tam l'gvus n'gufoy. Precisely the point that we've been discussing in the sugya, that when it comes to a tam, an apotropos is appointed, and he's responsible for seeing to it that the chatzin nezek is paid out of the goof of the animal. So why don't we say that? Why don't we say the braisa is talking about that, rather than having to say that the braisa is talking about a mu'ad, and then requiring us to say that the chatzin nezek that Rabbi Yaakov says is only the part of, only as a result of the part that it's a result of the part that it's a tam. So that would explain actually. So what we just said before, what Tosafot says, it actually also says, just more briefly, Rashi says that therefore that is why in earlier in the sugya we said, we asked why isn't it said Rabbi Yaakov Machayev? Now we understand why, because if you said Rabbi Yaakov Machayev, then it would mean that we are talking about a muad, and Machayev means his chayev nezek shalem. So now therefore he'd have to be telling us that no chatzi nezek, which once we say chatzi nezek, automatically we understand that means that we're talking about a tam, and why would there be a chiddush with a tam that he pays chatzi nezek is because we're talking about over here it belongs to a cheresh shoyt of a cotton, and we're saying that an apotropos needs to be involved. So why don't we learn the braisa that way? So Ravina answers him, hachi kamar. The reason why Rava wants to explain the braisa that way, because choda de ispe tauti taima, because he would rather explain the braisa, given that Rava understands, like we said before, that Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Yehuda agree on certain points, then Rava would rather say that the braisa is talking about a muad where he did shmira posa, because then you have choda de ispe tauti, you have one braisa, one statement of Rabbi Yaakov from which we would be able to learn 2 points. That he holds, like Rabbi Yehuda, as far as Shmira Pchosa for a Muad, and that he holds Sad, and within that, Sad Tamus from Koyma and Medis, he's still responsible for the half of that fact that it was a Tam before, and also the fact that we set up an Apotropos, and that Apotropos is responsible for seeing to it that the Tam you pay me go for it. If you only said the braisa is talking about a tam, then you would only have one chiddush, and therefore Rava would rather say that if we have this braisa, Rabbi Yaakov says you pay chatzi nezek, we would rather assume that there's greater chiddushim in it, and therefore to say that we're talking about a more. So that would explain Rava's explanation of the braisa. So in short, you have Abaya would say that both braisas are talking about a muad, and the reason he's paying chatzi nezek only rather than nezek shalem is because Rabbi Yaakov is saying you don't have an apotropos collect the half for the tam, so therefore you can only have the half that's added as a result of it being a muad is being collected. That would explain Rabbi Yaakov's opinion. Meanwhile, Rabbi Yehuda would be disagreeing and saying that no, you do set up an apotropos for it to collect everything, and therefore nezek shalem is being paid. According to Rava, we're saying also both braises are talking about a muad. The reason why you're paying chatzi nezek according to Rabbi Yaakov is because we say both Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Yehuda are agreeing that you pay only chatzi nezek. Rabbi Yehuda never said you pay nezek sholem. He only said machayev, and Rabbi Yaakov is clarifying that machayev means chatzi nezek because you are having an apotropos to collect from the goof. but in this case over here, really what you're doing is you're collecting only the part for it being a tam, not the part for it being a muad, because there was shmir of chosa, and therefore as a muad he'd be potter. Okay. The Gemara says, Ravina Omar. Ravina says there's another way of understanding the braisa. Now, like this, we have a bias saying that Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yaakov are arguing on the point about whether, according to Abaye, they're arguing whether you appoint an apotropos to collect from a tam. According to Rava, they're not arguing at all. Ravina Omer, Ravina says there's another way we can understand. Rishus Mishane Ikebenayhu. We can say that the machloikas, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yaakov, is about the point of Rishus Mishana that we started discussing yesterday, when the animal goes from one person's Rishus to another, does that change its din? We're going to have a muad. So suppose the animal became muad under the supervision of the apotropos. Then the cheresh or the shoiter or became the cheresh was healed. The shoiter was the shoiter became normal. The cotton grew up. So now it goes more into the rishus. Now the apotropos doesn't have to be involved anymore. Rabbi Yehuda sava hareu v'chaskasei. Rabbi Yehuda will hold it still retains its chazaka of being a muad. But Rabbi Yaakov amar rishus mishana. Rabbi Yaakov said even this is considered rishus mishana. Therefore it goes back down to a tam, and therefore it's paying only chatzin ezek. So that would be another way of explaining Although the Rashba wonders in that case, then the expression should be Rav Yaakov Einem Shalom Ela Chatzin Nezek, to imply more clearly that he's saying that, look, Rav Yehuda, you're saying it's still a Mord and Nezek Shalom. I'm saying that no, it's been downgraded back to a Tam now because Rishus Mishana, and therefore it's paying only Chatzin Nezek. So the Rashba wonders why Rav Yaakov wouldn't be using that expression in this case. Okay, in any case, so we have a few different ways of explaining what Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Yehuda hold, respectively. Next, the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, apotrupsin mishamim min ha'aliyah. Apotrupsin, now we discussed yesterday what happened, so now the Gemara is going to go on to a related topic. We've been talking about an apotrupus in terms of paying out the Chatzi Nezek or the Nezek Shalem, whether the payment for a tam is done under his supervision or not, and what happens by the case of Muad, and we discussed yesterday who is it that pays out, when it comes to a Muad, are we paying out from the Apotropos's property, or are we paying out from the Yisoyim's property? Anyway, so now let's talk about the related case. What happens if a shur belonging to Yisoyim kills a person? Now, when a shur or any other animal kills a person, we're going to start talking about tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, the details. The Torah tells us the animal is given skila. The first few times that the animal does, it's potter, because the animal is still, the owner is potter, because it's potter from paying anything else, because the animal is a tam. If this happens repeatedly and is warned, then the animal becomes moored. Now, not only is the animal chayev misa, but the owner also is chayev to pay something. The expression in the pasuk is, v'gam ba'olav yumos. The expression is that the owner is also put to death. But we explain, and we're going to be learning this, that it doesn't mean that the owner himself is actually executed by Beis Din. It means he's chayev misa b'dei shamayim for not being careful with his ox. And instead, the Torah continues in Kofo Yushas Olav that you would make him pay a monetary ransom to the victims of the Nizek. Not only when the animals are moored. By the way, we're going to learn in the Gemara tomorrow, how is it possible if the shur is given skila after the first or the second time it does it, then how does it ever become a moored in the first place? We're going to deal with in the Gemara tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, several possible scenarios. Anyway, the point is, now what happens if this ox belongs to Yisomim? So what happens as far as the Kofo? So Tana Rabbanan. Apotrupsim mishamim min ha'aliyah. The apotrupsim, when they're responsible for watching the shur and for payments. So if the animal is moored, then they pay min ha'aliyah, then they pay out of the aliyah, out of the other property, not out of the guf. And as we learned before, within that you have the machlokas, Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Chanina, whether the apotrupsim lay out the money or whether it comes directly from the property of the Yisraelim. Anyway, but the Braisa says, v'ein meshalmin kofer, however, in that kind of case, the kofer is not going to be paid if the animal is a moored. For that matter, here we're mentioning as far as Yisomim, but the Marashal points out the same thing would apply also to a Cheresh and a Shoita, and would also apply for that matter if the owner went to Medina Sayyat. In all those cases, then the Apotropos is not supervising the payment of a kofer. Well, the Gemara asks, Man Tana Kufra Kapara? Well, which Tana is it that says, now there's two ways of looking at that kofer. You can say that it's a kapara. The person was saying the mazik, the owner of the animal, should have been chayiv misa b'dei shamayim, and instead the Torah is giving him an opportunity to redeem himself by paying money. Or we could look at it that it's compensation to the yoshim of the victim. Now they lost their breadwinner, they lost a valuable asset in the family or whatever, and therefore you're compensating them for that. Those two possibilities are called kufra kapara, that the kofer is a kapara, versus kufra mamona, that we say it's an ordinary monetary payment. We'll have the, like you have nowadays, you have compensatory damages in American law. When a person is killed in an accident or something, then they have part of the damages that will be paid out is that they'll figure out the person's lifetime earnings or however they figure it out exactly. So that would be kufra mamona. So man tana kufra kapara, which tana is it that's saying that the kofer is essentially meant for a kapara, the yasni lavne kapara ninu, in which case we would say that yisomim, being children, they're not yet chayev in mitzvahs, so therefore they're not chayev in the concept of kapara yet, and that would be a reason why to say that they're potter from kofer. Rishonim, by the way, bring up the point why we wouldn't say the apotropos himself pays the kofer. After all, he's responsible for watching the animal. So the shittim kubetzis brings from the ra'ah. We learned yesterday there is the consideration. We don't want to discourage people from becoming apotropsim. So it's one thing when there's something that he can collect later on from the yisomim, then we can say, fine, he won't be discouraged from being an apotropos by having to lay out, because eventually he'll be able to collect from them when they grow up. But here, given if we say that the potter from kofer means he's going to be putting out this money for the kofer and he's never going to be getting it back, so therefore he may say, why should I bother becoming an apotropos and watching the animal in the first place? Therefore, we don't want to make him liable for kofer. A different answer. There's a Talmud of Rabbeinu Tam who wrote a pir. Talmud Rabbeinu Tam, whatever Aleph stands for over here, Rabbeinu Tam, Vredesh Aleph. He explains that when it comes to Nezek, we're saying, look, you know, there's Tikkun Olam involved over here. You don't want that animals of the same are just going to be running wild and causing damage without any recourse. But Kofer, if we're saying this because of Kapara, then we're not necessarily going to make a takana to that effect. So therefore, so the apotropos is not paying for one reason or another, and according to this way of looking at it, the yisomim are not paying either because they're children and they're not subject to the concept of kapara. Which Tana says, Amar Rav Chista, Rabbi Shmuel, B'nai Shmuel, Rabbi Yechon ben Breukah, that would be according to Rabbi Shmuel, the son of Rabbi Yechon ben Breukah. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, when the Pasuk says, V'nos and Pidyan Nafshoi, the Pasuk says, he, the Mazik, should pay a ransom for his soul. So what does that mean? Dmei Nizek means we figure out the value of the Nizek, and that's the amount that he pays. That's the Tanakhama says. Rabbi Shmuel, B'nai Shmuel, Rabbi Yechon ben Breukah, Dmei Mazik. On the other hand, Rabbi Shmuel says it's the value of the Mazik. We figure out how much the Mazik himself would be worth if he were to be sold as a slave or something. Because the purpose is to pater him from Misa Bidei Shemayim. So therefore, it has to be his own value where he himself deserves to die, and therefore we're saying that instead he's paying this kofer. So, my lab b'hokamifagi. So shouldn't we assume that that is the machlokas? The Rabbanan Sabri Kufra Mamonahu. The Rabbanan, the Tanakama, holds that the kofer is Momon, so therefore it has to be. So obviously, therefore, it's going to be the value of the Nizek, the same as any other Momon that you're paying for damage, is the value of the damage that was caused. The same way over here, we figure out the value of the damage is there was a Nizek over here, and he was worth X amount as a slave, and now he's not because he's dead. So therefore, that would be the amount you pay. So that would be, they hold that kufra mamona. Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher, Rabbi Yechon ben Breukah, Sava, kufra kapara. Whereas Rabbi Shmuel would hold that the kofer is a kapara, and therefore he would say that it's the value of the mazik because it's meant as a kapara for himself. So we'd have the nafkamina between them, of course, would be as far as this case of the Yisomim. The Shittim Kobetus also brings from a Talmud of Rabbeinu Peretz, what if the Yoshim want to be Mochel? If you say Kufra Mamona, then they have the ability to be Mochel. If it's a matter of Kapara, then they can't be Mochel. Another point is, what happens, for example, if the guy doesn't have what to pay? If you say it's Mamona, then he's Potter. If you say it's Kapara, then he's going to have to, then he better go raise the money for that Kapara, otherwise he's going to be punished Min HaShemayim. So if we understand the machlokas that way, then it comes out the braisa that we quoted before that says the apotropsin don't pay kofer would be according to Rabbi Shmuel. But the Gemara says Amar Papa loy, not necessarily. Kula Am Kufra Kaparahu. You could say that both Tanoim hold that the kofer is a kapara. The machloekus would be as follows. Rabbanan Sabri ben Nizek Shaminan, Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher Rabbechon ben Breukah Savor ben Mazik Shaminan. The machloekus is, yes, it's a kapara, but even within the possibility that it's a kapara, we could say that you go according to the value of the Nizek rather than the value of the Mazik. And that would be the machloekus. So my time of the Rabbanan, so why would the Rabbanan say we go according to the Nizek? Because they would say, Nemra Shisa Lamata v'Nemra Shisa Lamayla. Because in two places in Parashas Mishpatim, when it talks about these dinim, it uses the shortest shos or shosa, which means to shis, whatever is the shortest, which means to place. So by kofer, the expression is kechol asher yushas olav. He pays the kofer according to what is imposed on him by beis din. So earlier, a few psukim earlier, you have a case where two people are fighting and one of them injures a pregnant woman and causes her to miscarry. So also you have this word yoshis. You have the word kasher yoshis olavala isha. He pays according to what the husband, the father of those unborn children, imposes on him. Meaning that they go to Beis Din and Beis Din figures out the amount that he should have to pay the husband as compensation. So we have this shurdah shist in both places. Mala halim b'dinizek. Now, when it comes to the pregnant woman, what are we calculating according to? Obviously, we're calculating the value of the nizek. We're saying we figure out how much would she have been worth while pregnant with a child, and how much is she worth without that? Meaning, hypothetically, if she were to be sold as a slave, as a maid servant while pregnant, such that the potential buyer is getting not only a shivcha but also potential children, then he would pay more. Whereas if she's not pregnant, then he would be paying less, and that would be the difference that the mazik pays. Now, obviously, then therefore we're going according to the value of the nizik. Therefore, the Tanakhama says, therefore, that Abanan say afkan the nizik. The same way when it comes over here to the kofer, also the Torah is implying that it's the value of the nizik. Whereas Rabbi Shmuel says, look, I mean, the pasuk says that he should give a ransom for his soul. So that would be who's given the ransom, who's given the code for the mazik. Therefore, it has to be the value of his soul, the value of his life. So therefore, it would be that we go according to the mazik. And Rabbanan, the Chachamim answer back, they say, ain't pidyon nafshik siv. Sure, of course, it says pidyon nafshik, but miyuk ki shaminin, the nizik shaminin. However, the actual payment goes according to the value of the nizik based on that comparison of the word yoshis from earlier, from the case of Dmei Vlodis, where the case of paying for the unborn children versus now. So actually, there is an interesting discussion about this. Is this an actual gzeira shava that the Chachamim are using? If so, then we would say, look, by the Dmei Vlodis, it's not kapara, it's only mamon. So how could they be saying over here that it's kofer? We have a concept called ein gzeira shava lemechta. We don't have a gzeira shava only by halves. If we're going to do a gzeira shava, we learn the entire thing. So a number of Rishonim and Achronim discuss the possibility that maybe it's not really a Gzeira Shava. It's called Yomad Sosum and Amaforash. We're just defining what does the word Yushas mean? Means the value of the Nizek. For that matter, the Ritva explains that given that it's not a Gzeira Shava, that would explain why is the Gemara not bothered by, well, why isn't Rabbi Shmuel learn this Gzeira Shava, and is it Mufna or not, as the Gemara usually does when we're dealing with Gzeira Shava? Because we would say it's not, in fact, a gzeira shava, it's only a gilui milsaval. Okay. So anyway, the point is that machoikas doesn't necessarily have to do with this point. So therefore, when we say that the yisomim are not paying kofar, that's not necessarily only according to Rabbi Shmuel. The Chachamim may agree with that point as well. They're just saying when a kofar is going to be paid, it is the value of the nizik rather than of the mazik. The Gemara tells a story from which we're gonna derive a couple of questions as far as the dinim of kofer. The Gemara says Meshabach le Rava l'Rav Nachman v'Rav Acha bar Yaakov de Adam Gadol. Rava was telling Rav Nachman and praising Rav Acha bar Yaakov and saying that he's an Adam Gadol, he's a great Talmud Chacham. Omalei, so Rav Nachman says, okay, when he comes to you, then bring him to me. You're saying he's such an outstanding Talmud Chacham, I want to meet him. He also a gadei. So when Rav Acha bar Yaakov came to visit Rav Nachman, Omalei boy minay milsa. So Rav Nachman says, ask me something. As we have the famous expression, shailas chacham hatzi tshuva, that a good question by a talmid chacham is itself half the answer. So I want to hear what kind of good question, what kind of great question in Torah you Rav Acha bar Yaakov can come up with. So Bomine, so Rav Acha asked him, Shur shal shnei shutvin, suppose you have an ox that belongs to two partners, Katen Mishalman Kofer. If that ox becomes moored and you end up having to pay Kofer, what do we do as far as paying the Kofer? Do we say Mishalam Hai Kofer Bahai Kofer? Do we say that each one of the two partners pays their own Kofer? Can't Kofer Achad Amrachman of Leishne Kofrin. The Torah, after all, says you pay only one Kofer, not two. So like this, we're not going to say that the mazik should. Now, as far as nezek, sure, what we're saying is all we want is the nezek should get paid. So each one of them is going to be paying. Rashi points out that each one of them is going to be paying his half of the nezek, and together the person is receiving full nezek. No question about that. But when it comes to kofer, if now that we just established that kofer is a kapara, both of them need an individual kapara. A half a kofer is not necessarily going to be enough for that purpose. On the other hand, the Torah is not saying that you have to pay two kofrin. The Torah is saying that you pay one kofer, implying it's only one. On the other hand, high chatzi kofer, and if each one is paying only half a kofer, then kofer shalom amrachmanu v'lo chatzi kofer. Then you would say that on the other hand, the Torah is saying you pay one kofer, not you pay a half, because after all, each one needs their own complete kapara. So maybe therefore each one should be paying their own complete kofer. But on the other hand, then it comes out that the nizik is gaining more than he should. Now, Tosfos draws a distinction. Of course, you know, we have, for example, when it comes to Hilchos Shabbos, if we have something was carried out to Rishus Rabin, let's say, or some malacha was done by two people where neither one could have done it on their own, then we say each one is chayiv a full chatas. So Tosfos says, okay, they or each one would be chayiv koris, if they did it b'mezid, therefore we can say they're chayiv a full, therefore they're chayiv a full chatas when they did it b'shoyim. And also, each one is bringing their own chatas. Who cares? Nothing wrong with that. But here, after all, the kofer is going to somebody else. So why should the other guy gain? Because here the shor belongs to two people. So that's the question. Adi Yosef v'kama ayin ba. So now Rav Nachman was sitting and thinking into this question. So then Rabbi Acha says, I have another question, also as far as kofer. Starting with Tznan, we learn in a Mishnah in Erchin, Chayavi Erchin and Mashkin and Oysan. When a person owes an Erech to the Beis Mikdash, then the Gizbar or Beis Din will take a Mashkin from him to pay it. So a person has said, for example, I pledge my Erech to the Beis Mikdash, and we look up in Parshas B'chokosai, and we find, for example, he's a man between 20 and 60 years old, and therefore his Erech is 50 Sloyim. If now he doesn't pay that Erech in time, then Beis Din, or the Gizbar of the Beis Mikdash, is going to go and take a mashkin from him until he pays up. On the other hand, the Mishnah says, Chayav v'chatois v'ashomis, ein m'mashkin n'oysan. On the other hand, when it comes to a chatas or an osham, then we don't do that, because he himself, because the chatos of the osham is for kapara, we assume that he's going to bring it as soon as possible, because he feels bad about the aveda that he did. He doesn't want to be punished by Hashem, and therefore he's going to bring it as soon as possible. Whereas Erchin was more that he voluntarily gave a donation, and therefore we could say, I'll give it when I get around to it. If not that much of a hurry, therefore we need to take a mashkin from him. So now the question is, chayve kofrin mai, what about when a person is chayav kofrin? Given to kapara, who on the one hand the kofer is a kapara, therefore kachatas va'oshem dami michma chomer alavev like boy mashkune. Maybe it's considered therefore like a kachatas or an oshem. It's considered. So he would consider it something very serious to himself, and therefore he would say. Therefore he wouldn't delay it unduly, and therefore we don't need to take a mashkin from him in order to collect it. The same way as a chatas or an oshem. Or duma given to lachaber who deboy misvalei. Or maybe we say, since he has to pay it to somebody else, mamoinahu, maybe therefore it's only a matter of mamon, v'loyla gavoyahu, it's not something that's being given to Hashem, it's not something that's being given to the Beis Mikdash, v'loy chomer alei, therefore he maybe wouldn't consider it to be such a serious thing, uboy mashkune, and therefore you would have to take a mashkin from him in order to force him to give it, because otherwise he may say, it's not money to hektish, I'll get around to it. So that would be the question. Now Tosfos says that the question basically is not so much as far as Beis Din, the Yoshim of the Nizek themselves, would they be able to come and take a mashkin from him in payment of this, because otherwise he may not get around to it. On the other hand, the Rashba says that no, that's if he doesn't want to pay, then sure, Beis Din is going to go and collect from him just like any other Nizek. But that would be the question. Do we do that b'chlal, whether we're talking the Yosha and Nizek, or whether we're talking Beis Din? The point is, do we say that, or do we say, like a chatas or an asham, he's going to be sure to bring it soon enough because he doesn't want to get punished from Hashemayim, and therefore there's no need to take a mashkin for him. Inami, or another way you could look at it is, kiven dehulay chata, since after all, when it comes to the shermuad, he himself hadn't personally done an avera, unlike when he's bringing a chatas or an asham. So, umamonehu da'azik, it's only his mamun that caused hezik. Loy chomim milseil avay, maybe he doesn't consider it to be such a serious matter, or boy mashkune, and therefore again, we would have to take a mashkin from him in order to force him to pay, because otherwise he may say, I'll get around to it eventually. So that was Rav Acha's second question. So Rav Nachman answers him, Shavgan, leave me alone, don't keep asking me questions. Is stagar b'kamaisa. I was already closed up, meaning I was already stumped by the first one. I don't even know an answer to the first one, and you're already asking me a second one. So don't keep on asking me because I still have the first one to figure out. The Oruch has a bit of a different girsa, and he explains that it means Rav Nachman is saying, I'm already sick from your first question, I feel so bad, I can't think of an answer to it, and you're already asking me a second one, so please, I give up. Fine, you've stumped me. An interesting explanation from one of the Achronim, called Ateras Chachamim, that Rav Nachman, after the first question, he would have tried to answer it by a din that says in the Masechta Makkos, as far as Edom Zomim, but now, when Rav Acha bar Yaakov asks the second question, then Rav Nachman realizes that Rav Acha bar Yaakov doesn't hold according to the premise that he would have wanted to use, so therefore he's saying, look, your second question closed off, stagger, in Lashon Sagar, it closed off the avenue that I would have used to answer your first question, so now I give up. I have no good answer to either one of your questions. Interesting thing over here, by the way, usually when the Gemara starts out a story with Mishtabach Beib Adam Godelhu, that one Amora says to another, this is a great person, and he says, I want to meet him, many times in the Gemara, it comes out that the one who wants to meet him finds some flaw in the visiting Talmud Chacham. He points out that he's not learning something correctly. Here it's the other way around, where Rav Acha bar Yaakov shows up Rav Nachman and stumps him. The Gemara says, now, so let's go on to another point as far as Tam versus Muad, and talk about particularly the matter of a Shoyo. Now, a Shoyo was one of the four Shoymerim, so what happens in terms of, we're going to get back to the point of Rishus Mishana over here, and various other things in connection with that. So, turn it up on him. Shalei v'cheskes Tam v'nimtza Muad. A person borrowed an animal on the understanding that the animal was a tam, and it turns out that it was a muad, and now it's gored, and now the question is, what is the dinim, and what are the dinim as far as him paying? So the din will be the owner pays half the nezek and the shoyel pays the other half, because after all once the shoyel takes responsibility for the animal, then he becomes responsible to guard it and is chayev for it nezakin. But in this case, where he, as far as he knew, it was a tam, fine, as a tam he'd be paying chatzin nezek, therefore that's all he's paying chatzin nezek. The owner has to pay the other chatzin nezek because he didn't tell him. If he had told him, then the shoyel would be completely responsible, because then he'd be the one, then he'd know he has a muad animal on his hands and he has to guard it. On the other hand, the braisa continues, huad beveis shoyel vechzira labailim, if it became muad while it was in the shoyel's possession. So during the time when the shoyel had the animal, it gored three times and became, and was worn and basted and became muad, vechzira labailim, and then he returned it to the owner, bailim meshamim chatzin nezek, then the owner pays chatzin nezek, because it gets downgraded back to a tam, vechoyel potter miklum, and the shoyel is potter, because now it goes back to being a tam, because of shinu reshus, because reshus meshana. Now, the Gemara is going to ask further on in the sugya that we didn't say reshus meshana the first time around. Why are we saying it now? When the shoyel returns it, that the Gemara will deal with later. But first, let's analyze the beginning of the braisa. Omar shalim cheskas tam nimtza muad b'ayim shaman chatzin nezek v'shoyel chatzin nezek. We're saying that in that case where he thought that it was a tam and now it turns out to be a muad, so the owner is going to pay chatzin nezek, the shoyel is going to pay the other chatzin nezek. So the question is, why is the shoyel chayev at all? Why should he be chayev for the second half of the nezek for the part that it's a muad? Or why should he be responsible for the one half that it was a town? Le Malay, why can't he argue to the other guy? Turda She'ili, I borrowed an ox from you. Arya Lo She'ili, I never borrowed from you a lion, meaning, in other words, an animal that's fierce and an animal that's fierce and dangerous like a lion. In other words, if it were a tam, it wouldn't necessarily have gored. So therefore, it's only goring because it's a mu'ad and it's habituated to doing that. So therefore, I never intended to borrow a mu'ad in the first place. How can you be mechayev him for anything? So Omar Rav, so Rav answers, we're talking about that the shoyel does know that this ox does regularly gore. However, he doesn't know that it was three times yet. So therefore, he already knows that this animal is starting to be prone to goring. So therefore, we can say that he knew that there's something about this animal that you have to watch it more than the average animal. Not necessarily to the extent of a mord, because he didn't know it actually became a mord. He didn't realize that it already happened three times. Or the Torah Chaim learns a little differently and says that we're talking about he knows that it was more than three times already, but he didn't know that they had already been made and based in. Maybe each time the owner made some kind of pshara with the nizek, and therefore it never went to Beis Din in the first place. So Tertus Chaim explains that we're talking about, so he knows this animal has already gored many times, and if it had actually gone to Beis Din, it would have already been a mord. As it is, he thinks that did not happen, and the owner didn't volunteer that information. Now it turns out it's a real full-fledged mord. It's actually gone to Beis Din, and it's been declared a mord. So therefore, but at least he knows that it has gored various times, less than three times, according to Rashi, even more than three times, according to Torah Chaim, and therefore, he should have a responsibility to watch it, at least as a tam, even though he doesn't know yet if it's moored, therefore we can be mechayev in the chatzi nezek for a tam. So the Gemara says, okay, well, the name alay, still he can argue, tam she'ili, mu'ad lo she'ili. Okay, so then I borrowed a tam, I didn't borrow a mu'ad, so now it's a mu'ad, it gores more often, so therefore I wasn't taking on myself that kind of guarding. Well, the Gemara says, okay, shum da amalay, so the owner answers back, so. Well, so what? After all, eat tam hava, and if it was a tam like what you thought, palganizka boi shalomi, you would have to pay chatzi nezek, hashtanami, zil shalom, palganizka, therefore fine. Over here, you're also on the hook for chatzi nezek, because after all, fine, even according to your svara, you would have been paying chatzi nezek. Now, there's no reason really that the Gemara even had to bring that in. It's really more of an introduction to the rest of the questions that the Gemara is going to ask over here. So the Gemara says, v'neimalei, so why can't the owner say, fine, but there's another difference, itam hava mishtalam migufay, if the animal had been a tam, then the chatzi nezek that I would be paying would be only out of the guf of the shur, so therefore I wouldn't really be losing out, because the shur doesn't belong to me, it belongs to you, so therefore if half the shur, if part of the value, part of all of the value of the shur is being given away for the chatzi nezek, I wouldn't have lost out, whereas like this, you're saying that I have to pay chatzi nezek. Like this, you're saying the animal is a mu'ad, and therefore nezek shalom is being paid, and I'm having to pay half out of my aliyah, and you're having to pay half out of your aliyah, so therefore I'm losing out. Which Tosfos points out that we learned before, we said Rabbi Yehuda would hold sad tamus min kol ma'amedis, that a mu'ad, we said according to him, is a tam plus, meaning that the dinim of a tam still continue to apply to it. So according to that, if we looked at it like that, there wouldn't be a question, because then he'd say that, look, the half as a tam is being paid in the gufay either way, and only the half of a mu'ad, which is the part that the owner of the animal is responsible for, that would be paid min haliyah. So the whole argument over here in the Gemara, this particular argument, another one that the Gemara is going to bring soon, is only according to the Chachamim who disagree with Rabbi Yehuda. Anyway, why can't he say that? But then I would have paid out the half, and it would have been paid me gufo, so it wouldn't really have been on me anyway. It would have been on you. Whereas like this, I'm having to pay half out of my aliyah. So the Gemara answers, Mishum da Omale, because the owner can answer back. So if say, at lav turda boz shalom ilididi, and if that had happened, if it was paid out migufay, what would happen? You still wouldn't get off with nothing. You would after all have to repay me, because it was my ox. So yes, we would say if the ox is worth 100, for example, and the whole chatzin nezek was 100, and therefore the nizek was going to take the animal, you after all wouldn't get off the hook for that. You're a shoyl, you're chayev to give me back my animal or its value, so you'd have to be paying me $100 anyway. So then fine. So you're not really, so one way or the other, either the animal would be taken away in payment of the nezek, and then you'd have to compensate me for its value, or directly you're paying out the chatzin nezek out of your money. Either way, you're not losing out anything, so therefore you have no claim against me that you should say that you're potter. Okay. So the Gemara says v'nei malei. Still, why can't the shoyl make another argument? This is, by the way, an example of the kind of thing that they mentioned in Hayom Yom, that when something is really negeya to a person, when something is really a particular concern of a person, then he'll come up with all kinds of ideas that he never would have been able to under normal circumstances, because Rotzen has such a powerful effect on a person, and we have these kinds of examples where even a simple person, even Amorex or even women or whatever who don't learn Torah, would still come up with all of these arguments al pi halacha, which are considered valid, and the Gemara deals with them, even though they may not know the actual halacha, because when it's negeya to them, then that person comes up with ideas that they never would have otherwise. Anyway, so now the shoyl can make another argument. E tam hava, if the animal had been a tam, majina, I could have, after all, chatzin nezek, as we've learned earlier in the Masechta, is a knas. We know the concept called moed of a knas potter, as we've learned before, that if a person is chayev knas and he admits it in Beis Din, then he's potter. He's only chayev when edim come and testify that he's chayev in it. Well, very well. I would have said in front of Beis Din that my show did it, or the show that I borrowed did it. I would have been potter because moed of a knas potter. Whereas now, if the animal is a mord, I can't do that, because now it's not a knas anymore, now it's mammon. Now, Tosfos points out, there is later on in the Masechta, we touched on earlier, and we're gonna learn in more detail later in the Masechta, that we have a machloikas Rav and Shmuel, where the moedib knas remains potter when it comes, when edim do come afterwards, moedib knas v'achakach bo edim. So Shmuel, who holds that he would be chayev in that case, would hold that we could be talking about where Edom did come later, and therefore that would be an answer. So therefore, the question over here would be primarily according to Rav, that he would be potter, that he would be potter even in that case. So why can't he argue that? Now, there is the opinion that we learned earlier in the Masechta that the chatzin nezek is actually mamon. That it's, we would say the two ways we said we can look at it are that essentially most animals are not prone to goring. This particular one is, so therefore really he should, so therefore this one gored once or twice. So really, Me'ikra din, he ought to be potter completely, but the Torah is penalizing him, putting him a knas on him in order that he should guard it more carefully. The other way, that would be that palgan is knasa. The other way of looking at it is most animals do not gore. The other way of looking at it, rather, is most animals do gore. So by rights, he ought to be chayev nezek cholin, but the Torah gives him a break and reduces it to chatzin nezek until it becomes a mord. And according to that, we would say it's mammon, it's like any other payment of money. So even according to the opinion that Talgan is to Mamona, name alay, the shoyl should be able to argue, e tamhu, if the animal had been a tam, have a marikna leila agma. I would have been able to make the animal run away to a meadow, meaning, in other words, an end. Because after all, even if we say palganis mamona, for sure the collection of money for a tam is only migufoy. If the animal is not available, then there's no goof to collect from. So therefore he's saying, so why can't he say that? I would have done that. I would have made it run off to a meadow, and then you wouldn't be able to collect from it. Whereas now, as a mord, I don't have that option, because as a mord, you're not collecting from the goof of the animal. Now, a bunch of Rishonim deal with the question, what kind of an argument is that? I mean, everything we've been saying so far is based on that he's doing something that's valid according to halacha. Whether we're talking about that I would have guarded it differently as a tam versus a muad, it would have been paying me gufa and I wouldn't be on the hook for it, et cetera, here all of a sudden he's saying I would have done something illegal. How does that work? So Tosfos explains that what it means, and in fact Tosfos says, look, I mean, Beis Din would put him in nidui if he doesn't pay up. So Suppose Tosfos says, fine, but what he means is, if I had done that, then I would have said, then I would have been able to say to the Nizik, look, the animal is not available anymore. It ran off to the meadow. So you may be able to collect from it if you can find the animal, but maybe not. You know what? Instead of worrying about that, fine, let me just give you something, a small amount, to compensate you for your trouble and leave me alone. In other words, he's saying, I would have worked things out with him privately without going to Beis Din in the first place, because I would have told him, look, you know, I kind of have the upper hand over here. The animal's gone, and if you don't find it, you're not going to be able to collect at all. So that would be one way of working it. That's how Tosfos learns. Tosfos Shantz learns another point. He would say, okay, so Beis Din would put me in Nidui. I could live with that. Whatever the case, the point is, why can't he make that argument and say that I would have done that? The Yamshul Shlomo, the Marshal, points out another idea, and he says, no, obviously we're not usually going to say that a person can do something illegal to potter himself. What we're saying is that here he's saying, look, you know what? You, owner, after all, I mean, it's kind of your fault as well. You didn't tell me that this animal was a moored, so therefore I wasn't careful enough with it. Therefore, you were unfair to me. Therefore, I have the right maybe to do in something in a way that's unfair to you, namely to make the animal run away and then no nezek can be collected from it at all. Anyway, so why can't he argue that and say that therefore there's a difference between tam and moored? So the Gemara says, you're right. So Ella Hocha Mayaskinen going to act in Beis Din v'Tafse. We have to necessarily be talking about where Beis Din grabbed the shur before he had the chance to make it run away. So now the shur is already in Beis Din's hands to see what they do with it from there. So now, therefore, so the shur is paying Chatzi Nezek and the owner pays the other half. So now the Gemara says, Yihochi. Well, if that's the scenario, Bailam Amai Meshamim Chatzi Nezek, then why is the owner have to pay the chatzi nezek of mu'ad? Namely, now the owner of the animal has an argument the other way around. He should say, now you've caused that my shur was grabbed by somebody where I can't take them to Beis Din, because, in other words, you did things in such a way where Beis Din ended up confiscating the animal in order to pay off with it. So therefore, you've caused me a loss. You've caused me a loss. Therefore, why should I have to be paying for the other half of it? And Tosfos says, in other words, the point is that as soon as the animal gored, the shoyel should realize, you know what? There's a good chance this animal is a moored. It gored. It's unusual for animals to gore. It's unusual for a tam to gore in the first place. Very likely he should think that this was a moored, and therefore he should take extra care to make sure that Beis Din doesn't manage to seize the animal as a mashkin for the debt. And therefore, so why can't the owner say that it's your fault? If you had been more careful with it, Beis Din wouldn't have grabbed it, and then we could have worked something out. And the answer is Mishum Da'omale, because the Shoyal can answer back. Soif, after all, Lav Ma'aliyah Ha'avim Mishtalmi. Look, the animals are moored anyway. Beis Din, if they didn't have the shur to collect from, they would have collected from some other asset of yours. So you wouldn't have been able to make it run away and say, therefore, no collection can be done from it. Because look, either way, Beis Din would be collecting from some other property of yours. Well, the Gemara asks, Hanicha Hecha de Isla Nichsi. Well, sure, that works if the owner has other nechosim. What about where the owner has no other nechosim? After all, can't the owner say, in that case, I would have made sure that the shur runs off to the meadow, so they can't collect from it. I don't have any other assets, so they wouldn't have been able to collect from me. And the answer is, Mishum da amale, because the shur can answer back. The same way as I'm meshubad to you, that I have to return you your shur, the same way I have an equal shibud to the nizim, in the sense of midir Rav Nosson, based on Rav Nosson's din. The Tanya, this is called shibud of Rav Nosson. The Tanya Rav Nosson, minayim anoish v'chaveri mona v'chaveri v'chaveri. How do we know that if Reuven, that if Levi owes money to Shimon, and Shimon in turn owes him the same amount to Reuven, minayin shemitziyim mizev noisim lazeh, how do we know that we take the money from Levi and give it directly to Reuven, and Levi can't say to Reuven, lav bal dvorim didi at, you're not my bal din, I have no business with you, I only deal with Shimon. We say that no, we give it directly to Reuven. And it means also that Shimon can't say, I want to be paid off now by Levi, and later on I'll get to paying Reuven in my own good time. We don't say any of that. Shenemar, Talmud Loimar, therefore, Nosson says, because it says in the Pasuk, V'nosson la'asher osham loy, talking about a case of where a person stole money from somebody else, you give it to the one to whom he's guilty. Meaning you give it to the one to whom ultimately the money belongs to. So therefore it means that you go directly from Levi to Reuven. So the same way over here, the shoyer would say, look, you're the owner of the animal. You're responsible to pay for the nizik. So I'm doing that proactively. I'm paying the nizik directly out of the shur. You can't say that, no, you should have made the shur run away and I would have dealt with the nizik on my own terms, because I have a shibud to the nizik as well by virtue of shibud to the nasan. And therefore, so there's nothing wrong in what I did, and you have no claim against me for doing things that way. So now, with all of those claims and counterclaims, then the result is what we say in the Braisa, that the shoyel is paying half the nezek, the half that he would have paid had the animal been a tam, and the owner is paying the other half of the nezek because the animal is after all a mu'ad, and therefore he's chayiv another chatzi nezek. Okay. Now, though, the Braisa continued, who had the vase shoyel? We said, if the animal became a mu'ad in the house of the shoyel, v'achzira l'bailim, and he returned it to the owner, then we said, bailim l'sham and chatzi nezek, v'shoyel potter miklum, then we said, the owner pays chatzi nezek, and the shoyel is completely potter. Now, potter on the face of it, because of reshus mishana. So the question is, say for reshus mishana, reisha mishus ena mishana, why is it that we're saying reshus mishana only in the end of the braisa, and we're saying, therefore, when it goes from the shoyel back to the owner, then it goes back from being mu'ad tam, whereas in the reisha, we didn't say that. So Omer Rabbi Yechanan Tavra. So Rabbi Yechanan says, yes, there is a contradiction. In the Braisa, Misha Shonazu Le Shonazu, the one who taught the first half of the Braisa did not teach the second half. Necessarily, we would have to say that the two parts of the Braisa are according to different Tanoim and they disagree with one another. Rabba Omer, Rabba says not necessarily. Midirei, you can say the whole Braisa is according to one Tana. Midirei Shu Rishus Eina Mashana, Seifanami Rishus Eina Mashana. No, we can say that both parts of the Braisa assume that Rishus Eina Mashana. So, the Sefer, Hainu Taima, so why is it in the Sefer that goes back from being Mu'ad to Tam, De Omale, Mishum De Omale, because the owner can say to the Shoyel, Lav Kol Kaminach De Miyad Itzlei L'Toroi. You don't have the Koyach to make my Shur into a Mu'ad. Meaning, in other words, how does it become a mu'ad? By goring repeatedly and being worn and based in. Look, it's your fault. You obviously didn't watch the animal well enough. So that's your problem. It became a mu'ad under your watch. As long as it's in your possession, you're going to have to treat it as a mu'ad. But now that it's coming back to me, now that you're done with borrowing it and you're returning it to me, I shouldn't be responsible for it becoming a mu'ad. As far as I'm concerned, you should have watched it better and prevented it from becoming a mu'ad in the first place. And therefore, and therefore we can say that now when it comes back to me, it becomes a tam. So that would assume that we don't say Rishus Mishana, but in this particular case, the owner has a valid reason to say that as far as I'm concerned, it never should have become a Mu'ad in the first place. Rapapa explains differently. If we say that given that the Sefer is obviously saying Rishus Mishana, because Rapapa doesn't accept that argument of Rabba, to say that that there should be a difference in that regard, to say that it's a mu'ad as far as you and not as far as me, then no, the sefer were obviously saying reshus mishana, it goes from the shoyel back to the owner, therefore it goes back to being a tam, then reisha nami reshus mishana, then in the reisha we would also say reshus mishana, reisha hainu taima, so the reason why in the reisha we're saying that it does not become that it does not go back to being a tam, just because the shoyel borrowed it, mishum de kol makom shoyelach shein bayel b'alav, because wherever it goes, it has the name of its owner on it. Meaning, in other words, the fact is, it still belongs to the owner. So therefore, there's not really a reshus mishana in this case for it to change its din. We talked about yesterday the possible reasons behind that din, where Rashi says the reason is because it's a technicality. The warning that was given to one person doesn't transfer to the other. So here we would say, okay, the fact remains though, it does still belong to the owner. So therefore the warning goes along with it. And therefore when it damages, Again, if the shoyl knew that it was a moord, he's going to be chayev nezek sholem, and if he doesn't know, then we said he's going to be chayev chatzin nezek and the owner of the other hand. Then we have whether the point that the Meiri had made, that by in a different environment it may behave differently, fine, but still, here it's not, it's only temporarily in that other environment, it's not, they haven't been sold or transferred or anything like that, so therefore not necessarily is that going to change the behavior of the animal, and therefore we would say in the Reisha, says your papa, that it can still be considered, that it can still be considered muad, and it doesn't change the tam just because it was given to the other person. Just because it was lent, just because it was lent out to the other person. Now, we said in the Mishnah, we said that an ox that's used in a stadium or a bullfight or whatever, where they provoke it, they train it and provoke it to gore, then if it kills a person, it's not chayav misa. We talked about yesterday, does that mean even if it kills somebody outside of the bull ring, or does it mean only in here? And that's machlokes rishonim. Anyway, Iboilahu, the question the Chachamim asked, mahul gabi mizbech. What about, would you be able to take an animal that was used like that in a bullfight and use it as a korban to bring on the Mizbeach? The fact is, an animal that kills a person is possible for a korban even when the animal is not going to be chayiv misa. So do we say over here that the fact is it killed people, therefore it's possible for a korban, or do we say that it was ba'onis, and that's why we're saying it's potter, in this case, from Skilla, so therefore the fact that it was ba'onis maybe is reason to make it that it could even be a korban. So Gemara says, Rav am a kosher or Shmuel am a posel. Rav says it would be kosher as a korban. Shmuel says it would be posel. Rav am a kosher onusu. Rav says because it's an onus, so Shmuel am a posel had a nevet by Aveda. Shmuel says, look, after all, an Aveda was done with it. It did kill a person. So therefore, so you have reason to still pass all as a korban. So the Gemara says, Mesu, I have a contradiction. I have a contradiction on Rav, actually. We're going to bring a Braisa, which once we analyze it, then we're going to see that it seems to fit better with Shmuel's opinion. A Braisa says, how do we know there are certain kinds of animals that are possible for a korban where something wrong was done to them? You have the possible, it says like this. You bring your korban min ha-behema, from the animals, min ha-bakar or min ha-tsoin, from the cattle or from the sheep. Tsoin actually is a general term that includes sheep and goats. Anyway, all those mins are a mute. Min ha-behema, lahoti ha-sadeveh v'asanirba. The word min ha-behema comes to exclude an animal that was used for bestiality, whether it was the active one or whether it was the active one or the passive one. Min ha-bakar, lahoti ha-sadeveh. The word min ha-bakar comes to exclude an animal that was worshipped as a Bodhi Zara. So even though, again, it doesn't become also for a regular person to use it, however it's also to bring it as a korban. It's something disgusting to Hashem, and therefore it's not to be brought as a korban. When it continues from the sheep, that comes to exclude mukta, an animal that was set aside to be used as a korban for avodah zarah. So again, it doesn't become also ba'anah just by setting it aside, but it does become also to bring it as a korban. And when it says u'minatzon, when it says and from the sheep, so the extra vav lahotzias anigeach, that comes to exclude an animal that gored and killed a person. Tosfos brings over here an explanation from the Gemara in Tmura that says why are we learning from Mina Behema, Reveya, and Nirba, and from Mina Boko, Nevan, and so forth. Why don't we learn the other way? Why don't we learn, for example, the one by Mina Behema comes to exclude Nevan, and then the other one comes to exclude Reveya and Nirba, whatever. The Gemara explains over there why that is. Anyway, Omer Reb Shimon, so Reb Shimon continues in the analysis of this din, so Reb Shimon says, Im nema reveya, lama nema negeya. If you have a posif that's giving us a mute, as far as reveya, then why does it need to say negeya? Can't we learn one from the other? Vim nema negeya, lama nema reveya. After all, both of them have the same din, that if there were Edim, then the animal is going to get skila. So Reb Shimon is saying, given that both of them, if there's Edim, the animal is chayiv misa, then it's logical to say that if one of them is also, when there's no Edim, so therefore there's no skila, if one of them is also as a korban, so is the other, why do we need to be told otherwise? Why do we need to be told specifically by each one? So he says, because each one has a chumrah that the other one doesn't have. Reveya, also by Onus Kerotzen. When it comes to Reveya, it doesn't matter whether it was by Onus or Berotzen, because like we're saying, whether the animal was Reveya or Nirba, we're learning them from the same passage. Nirba is Berotzen, is by Onus. After all, Nirba is that a man came and used the animal for bestiality. So the animal had no choice in the matter, and still we're saying that the dinim, still we're saying that the dinim of Reveya of Nirba apply, that if there were Edim, then the animal gets skila, the man also gets skila, but whatever, that we're not dealing with right now, and that if there were no Edim, it's possible for the Mizbeach. So there is a Chumra in Reveya and Nirba. Negeach, what also by Onus Kerotzen. On the other hand, when it comes to goring, we don't treat Onus like Kerotzen, which is the Gemara is going to bring now, that seems to work better according to Shmuel, that says that such an animal is possible for a carbon. But we'll deal with that after we finish with the Braisa. On the other hand, Negeach, Meshalom Koifer. On the other hand, when it comes to goring and killing, then you're paying Koifer. Reveya in Meshalom is a Koifer. And by Reveya, there's no such thing as Koifer. Lufficha, Hutzrach Loma, Reveya, Hutzrach Loma Negeach. Therefore, says Rav Shimon, that is why the Torah needs to mention Reveya. And concludes also Nirba. And Negeach separately, because you couldn't have learned one from the other. In fact, Tosfos says, and Marsho explains Tosfos, that's why we also couldn't have one pasuk and say that we learn the more chomer one from it, and then we'll learn the other tal by a tal v'chomer, because if we only had one pasuk, we would say it applies only to one of them, we wouldn't even think to make a tal v'chomer, because each one has, it's unique, there's not really a tal and a chomer, because each one has a chomer over the other. Anyway, the Gemara says, Katoni Mias, so Rav Shimon is saying, Reveya also by Onus Kerotzen, Negeach like also by Onus Kerotzen. That was saying that by Negeach, we're not treating Onus like Kerotzen. Now, Lamai Hilchsa, as far as what halacha, Lav Lekorban, wouldn't it be, after all, the context of the Braise is talking about what animals are usable and not usable for Korbanus. So therefore, we would assume that when it says it doesn't make Onus like Kerotzen when it comes to Negeach, is as far as Korbanus. So therefore, that would bear out Shmuel's point that when the animal was onus to that when the animal is onus to gore and to kill, then it's not possible as a korban. So the Gemara says, "Loi, not necessarily l'ktala." No, it may mean as far as the animal being given skila. That was saying that when it was ba'onus, when it was reveya v'nirva, it doesn't matter whether it was ba'onus or berotzen. Either way, the animal is chayiv skila. Whereas when it comes to negeach, then not. So Rav Shimon is saying that once we find by Misa, then we have a Chumrah in one over the other, then therefore we can't say necessarily that we would learn one from the other when it comes to Korbanos, because we have a Chumrah in a different area of Halacha, namely as far as the Misa of the end. And the Gemara says, In fact, it's more logical to say that Rav Shimon is referring to that. The Amr of the Korban, if Rav Shimon is saying as far as a Korban, and saying that you couldn't have learned one from the other, Negeach la'osava onus kerotzen, what do you mean? Lav onus didayksiv, lav rotzen didayksiv. When it comes to going, the pasuk doesn't explicitly say anything about onus or rotzen. Or rather, when it comes to a korban, when it comes to the psul of a korban, the Torah never makes any such distinction. So what do you mean? So when Rav Shimon uses the expression loy osa by onus kerotzen, we don't treat an onus like rotzen, but the Torah itself never actually says that that onus or rotzen comes into play over here when it comes to fitness for korbanos. El alav l'tala. Therefore, obviously, Rav Shimon must be referring to Misa and saying that. And saying that when it comes to Misa, when it comes to Skila, there's going to be a difference whether the animal did it by Onus or Berotzen, whereas by Reveya of Nirba, we're not going to make such a distinction, whereas by Negeach, we will. So the Braisa is not a contradiction to Shmuel, but it's not necessarily proving his point either. So we'll continue tomorrow, Best Hashem, analyzing this Braisa, and then go on to talk more about these dinim, about when a shur kills a person, and the dinim of what come into play then.
Shikaya.